Christian messaged me this morning saying that we're a really good podcast interviewing team. So kudos to us. Yay.
Nice. That's probably because I was keeping quiet most of the time. Hello and welcome to episode 51 of the Metacast Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm your host, Ilya Bezdilev.
And I'm Arnab Deka.
We are co-founders of Metacast, a new podcast app that we are building and are about to ship publicly. On this podcast, we talk about the behind-the-scenes stuff, how we build the company. We talk about how we make decisions.
The drama, the intrigue, the suspense.
Yeah, it is a very fun podcast.
Yeah.
And as you can guess, we never do pre-recorded intros. We always improvise on the fly, which makes this recording very fun.
Well, it makes it fun for us. Hopefully, it makes it fun for you too.
Yeah, if you actually want to share your feedback, yeah, you can always send us a note at hello@metacastpodcast.com. We don't get enough good words from people. Well, we don't get enough of any words from people. So yeah, send us some.
We do get words. Every week or so, we do get from like friends, family, people sometimes we run into, but not enough. Yes, we want more validation. Send it.
I want to have a problem that's a good problem to have. I want my inbox to be just overwhelmed by positive feedback about this podcast. Well, we are not there yet. In any case, we are about to ship the app. You can go and sign up at metacast.app, enter your email, and when the app is available, we will email you. Or go to metacastpodcast.com and sign up for our newsletter, where we also actually talk about the same topics as we are talking about on the podcast, but in a written, more structured form. It's written mostly by me without Arnab inserting his suspense thing. Yeah. What are we going to talk about today?
We all took a bit of time off during the holiday break, and we're going to talk about the feeling of the guilt post-vacation and maybe a bit more around that side. And then we're going to end with talking about our new podcast called Builders Gonna Build, which came out last week.
Yeah. And if you've been following us for a while and you listened to the last episode, you know that we had an emergency episode last week where we talked about the new podcast.
With my sound effects like pew, wee-oo, wee-oo. Yeah.
Yes. So today we want to talk about why we made the decision to do this. And actually in our write-up that we will do along with this podcast, I even want to share the doc that I wrote that we used to make the decision. I cut out some of the names and numbers from there, but otherwise, I think this doc is good to share so you can actually take a glimpse into how we make the decision. But anyway, let's go to our first topic.
Before we go to our first topic, can I interject with something that we were talking about on Slack like half an hour ago? This is like the warm-up intro, right? Today is January 24th when this episode is, you're listening to it hopefully on 24th or after, but we are recording this on January 17th. And on the night of 16th here in Vancouver, we had a pretty big snowstorm. So there's a massive amount of snow outside. And like a good citizen, I always make it a point to like shovel all the snow from the sidewalks because...
Wait. Can I ask something?
Yeah. Interject, yes.
Does the government oblige you to clean your pavements?
I believe in the US also, it's the same. You are supposed to take care of the sidewalk in front of your house.
So you're a good citizen because there is a law to abide to?
I mean, nobody's enforcing it or giving tickets, I suppose. But I do live next to an elementary school. And so there are a lot of kids walking here in the mornings. And we are on the base of a mountain, which is more like a hill. So there's a bit of slope. So if I don't do this, this area becomes like really slippery. And a bit more selfishly, I guess, if you don't shovel, then what happens is people start walking on it and it compacts the snow, which makes it super heavy to shovel later.
It becomes a slippery slope.
It does, yes. Yeah. I mean, if I don't do it within, say, a few hours of the snow falling and people start walking, especially with the heavy amount of like foot traffic you'll get during school hours, it's going to become like lifting concrete tomorrow. And I had that experience once, so I do it as a good citizen. See?
And you did some math today, actually, to calculate how much snow you move. I'll have to say this. Expose you, man. So your first calculation was, oh, I moved 3.5 tons of snow today.
Yeah. And then, no, I also like immediately said, that doesn't sound right. What's going on? Let's get into it very quickly. Because we get 3 to 5 times of snow, I don't do this often enough. We're not in Toronto or somewhere in the eastern US where you do this daily. So when I do it, it feels like a lot of work because our house is on the corner of 2 streets. So there's like front as well as the side and the back. So there's a lot of sidewalks. I wanted to do like, how much work am I actually doing every time this happens? So I walked around. So that was the first measurement. It's about 200 meters. So all through, that's how much I'm shoveling. Then it's about 1 meter wide, the sidewalk. So I'm doing about that. So that's 200 multiplied by 1 square feet. So 200 square feet still. And then it's about 1 foot of snow. We did get a lot of snow yesterday. I think that's about like 0.3 meters or so, 0.35 maybe, something like that. So all in all, the surface area that I did was 2,100 square feet, which is like a very nice, I think, 3-bedroom apartment in San Francisco or Seattle or New York, like a large 3-bedroom apartment, that amount. But then Ilya said, hey, why don't you calculate the density and then the volume and you'll get the actual weight of it. So I started with that.
Yeah, and the reason why I ask for that is because like shoveling 3-bedroom worth of snow, it just doesn't fit my mental model. I'm like, give me the number I actually can understand.
Right, which I still don't have, but I'll tell you why. So I went to ChatGPT, of course, and I said, hey, how much, what's the density of snow that falls on local cities in North America? And it gave, I think, 15 pounds per cubic meter or something like that. So using that calculation, it comes to like 3.5 tons of snow that I removed this morning in 1.5 hours. And then we were like, that doesn't sound right. So I dug more into it. So that density is probably the density of snow, or rather ice, in glaciers, which has been compacted over like thousands of years.
If you let people walk on your slippery slopes, it will be more compacted.
For 1,000 years without shoveling, yes. Yeah. So that's wildly off, way too much. Then I went to like a scientific paper. I was like, I don't trust ChatGPT anymore. Let me look this up myself. I looked up a paper and it said 0.15 to 0.45 grams per cubic meter. Okay, so that's very extremely light.
I guess it's snow that you can find in the air, I suppose, or something.
It's snowflakes, yes. It's not snow. So what I have is not snowflakes, and it's not glacial ice. It's somewhere closer to new form fallen ice, but it has compacted a little bit, right? So you know what I'm going to do after we record this?
Take an average.
No. No. I'll do the scientific method. I'll go out with a known volume jar. I know, like a liter. I'll take that ice from there. I'll go measure my weight without that jar and with that jar and see how much it is. And we'll know the density of the snow. And then we'll calculate how many kilograms of snow that I shoveled today.
Yeah. And you can follow this podcast because in the next episode, we will reveal. What do they say in these TV shows that no one watches anymore? Yeah, there will be a reveal of the answer.
I laughed too hard. I think I'm getting a cramp almost. Not because of the shoveling. Because of the laugh.
Do you really feel guilty for taking so much time on the podcast to talk about snow? Because that's a good segue into our next topic.
I wanted to do this in like a couple of minutes, but like everything, it went on a life of its own. But unlike our episode 7.5, which became a discussion like this and never ended, and then we decided to release on its own, let's now stop this Snowmageddon topic and go back to guilt.
Right. Guilt is a funny / not so funny thing, right? It's hard to control. It just comes up. And at least for me, it like swallows me whole. And I start to get anxious. I don't like the feeling of guilt. But it's also a feeling that I find very hard to get rid of. It's not just I can magically think it away. So I have to work through guilt in order to reduce it. The specific moment that we discussed in our Slack channel and we wanted to chat about on the podcast, I think it was this Monday. My kids don't have school. I think it's Martin Luther King Day. My wife needed to take them somewhere. And then my younger one wasn't feeling well. So I was faced with this decision, right? Do I take my older one to the fair? Because he wanted to meet his friend who's also coming there and all that. And maybe try to work there out of a coffee shop or something. Maybe I can drop him off with like our friends and then work from a coffee shop. Or I stay home with my younger one, which means I don't work at all. Or nobody goes anywhere. And I just go to my office, I work. Kids are unhappy and I feel guilt for not spending time with them. So, and I started to feel these two guilts, right? Do I choose the guilt of not helping my family? Or do I choose the guilt of not doing the work or like not pitching in enough, right? Then I remembered your words that you said a while back. Why are we doing this for? Aren't you doing this for living the life? Being able to just say, well, you know what? Today my family needs me. And I just go to the fair with my kid and like completely unplug, disconnect, actually have the fun time and then maybe come back, work some, but maybe not. I don't have a day fully packed with meetings and all that. Ultimately, actually, the younger one decided that he's fine because he didn't want the older one to go without him. So he went. You know how it goes with five-year-olds. He probably just wasn't in the mood, right? But then it also made me realize that when I was at a big company, I would have something like that come up. And I have like 6 meetings in my calendar, which I would have to like cancel or like take calls from the car.
Or ask people to move it. And because there's like 5 other people in that meeting, that can only happen in like 3 weeks now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have somebody whose calendar is like fully packed and all that. And then I would feel guilt.
You'd feel bad for the people who needs that meeting.
Yes. I guess for me, it's actually, I would probably feel more like, what would they think about me, right? Would they think I'm like a slacker or, you know, all that? I think that's where this was coming from. Or if I would tell my family that I cannot help them today, then I would feel guilt about not being able to help. I would be distracted at work anyway. So it's like you're sitting on 2 chairs, you don't help on either side and you feel unhappy, right? That's a prompt for this discussion. That's what kind of triggered this topic for us.
Right, right. So when I came back from India, it took me a good like 4 or 5 days to get back into the flow of work. And I think just like last Thursday or Friday is when I finally started getting into it a bit more. And this week I'm feeling much better, much more productive, excited. But that break was amazing, but also overwhelming in some ways, right? You're just not easily able to like come back into work as you would from a shorter break or maybe a different kind of break. So I was feeling a bit of guilt and I talked about that on Slack too. I mean, this is why we are running this kind of a company where it's okay to tell people that, you know, I'm feeling guilty about this and people are like, genuinely, both you and Jenny were like,
yeah, you should feel guilt.
Yeah. Come back to the meeting. Where are you? Yeah. But yeah, that's why we're running this kind of a company. Because when we also work, unlike how I felt about work at Amazon, I was always super passionate. But not like middle of the night passionate, where something would come up and I would like, oh, I have to write this down or I have to do this right now. It's so exciting. Because the next day's obligations are always on your mind. You can't at the middle of the night while working in my previous job at Amazon decide, oh, I'm going to work on this for 3 hours now because I have to wake up super early tomorrow and I have like an 8 a.m. meeting and I don't want to move that meeting because it would be unfair to the person who has set it up like 3 weeks before. Whereas now we don't have like that kind of scheduling and all that. I really enjoy working with a very small team, like 2 people basically. And
Wait, who of us 3 are you excluding? Because you said 2 people.
Well, I work with 2 people.
Oh, you work with 2 people. Okay.
Yes. Well, 2.5-ish right now because we also have like person helping with our website. Did we talk about that already or we will talk about that at some point, I guess?
I think we talked about it. Somebody wrote us and asked for an internship and we said yes.
Right. But yeah, it's kind of like you and Jenny is what I spend most of my work time with. But what I'm saying is, it's not like I have an 8 a.m. meeting every day next day morning. And if I feel like working at night, I would do it. And that's the difference. I think that kind of working style also makes you feel okay about having this kind of like guilt and saying, hey, you know what? I can't do anything today. It makes it okay.
For you, is it about like putting in the hours? Like, how do you quantify this, if you do?
Not ours. I think it's the feeling of getting things done. Like yesterday, okay, so the next episode, we're going to talk about Apple rejected our beta. We'll go into the details in the next episode. But because of that, we decided, okay, we need to add this one feature like really quickly. And I said, let's do it right now. Maybe it'll take a day or so. And within like half a day, I had the feature working, right? And being able to do things like that gives you that energy that helps you, I think, dissipate some of the guilt or negative energy that comes from feeling like I can't do something today because there's all these other things going on.
Yeah. During your break, did you feel guilty at all or?
No. No, I was in the moment. I mean, to be fair, I still am, I think. It was amazing because we talk about our immigrant journey back in like episodes 24, part one and part two. But for me and my wife, it's literally been close to like 20 years, right? As immigrants in US and then Canada for the last 5 years. And so every time we go to India, we would have like a visa interview. To come back to the US, you would have to get a stamping on your H-1B visa. And because we were both on H-1Bs, we would always have a stamping. That's in a different city. You go spend 3 days there, wait for your passport. And there's the additional like stress of maybe it gets rejected and then you're stuck there. So that was always there. This time when I went to India, it really felt like a vacation. Like I had a wonderful time, friends, family. And then when we came back, I don't know if we talked about it, we got our Canadian citizenship also last week. So yay. So a lot of like great things, but a lot of like things that are overwhelming in some ways emotionally. It's hard to like take out that stuff from your head that's been there for like many, many years. I don't know, 17 years, 20 years, you have not thought about this. And suddenly like all of this comes back. So yeah.
Yeah, I think part of what also maybe helps with not feeling guilt is because we decided that basically in our company is like you can take any vacation you want. Nobody's going to stop you, right?
How will we stop them? Like stop paying them? What would we do?
I think right now this policy works when we just have three people who nobody gets any money, right? We will see how that goes further on. But overall, I think there is this idea that people will self-regulate.
Yeah. If you need the time, take the time.
Yeah. But also sometimes like if you want the time, sometimes like you don't necessarily need the time, but maybe you want them. One thing that it's a quick detour that I've always really disliked about working for a corporation is like counting those days. You're like a bin counter doing this accounting, or like my child is sick. Do I take a vacation day or something? You always have to do this math because otherwise, like for me, when I would go back home, luckily we didn't have to stamp visas and all that, but it would take 2.5 days just to get to the destination. You can't even go for 2 weeks. You have to go for like 3 weeks to feel comfortable. Also, the jet lag is like right now, there's 11 hours difference. It is very taxing on adults and children alike.
Because literally the jet is taxing for a long part. So
Yes. Yes, you don't have much runway when you go to vacation like that. And then you have to be like, I have to return on this day to work because I don't have more days. And you would really like prefer to maybe spend 3 extra days just to get more recovery or maybe use a cheaper flight or maybe a more convenient flight and all that. Yeah, so I always kind of disliked that part, so which I'm happy we don't have to do anymore. Especially you can work remotely if you need to. Well, everybody is working remotely anyway.
And I feel like on the whole, this is the better thing long-term for our company as well, like for the product. I'm like ruthlessly thinking about the product, shipping it and all that. I think this is actually the right thing. If your head is not in it, take the day off. Because when you do come back, you come back with like full intensity at that time.
Yes, that's right. So actually, I haven't finished my thought. I think what helped is that during the Christmas, New Year's timeframe, we were just like, let's just all of us take the time off at the same time. And then you just know nobody working anyway. So there's no social pressure at all.
So without that, would you have felt guilty?
Yeah, I'll have to get really naked right now. If you're listening to this on audio, I'm talking metaphorically. So because my wife was out of country for a couple of weeks in late November, early December, then I was out for a couple of weeks, like completely off the grid for the first half of December. And then I came back like 3 days later. You lived to India. Jenny also went back to the US for a while. Because when my wife was out, I wasn't working at 100% because both of the kids were on me, right? And even at the end of the day, like, I was just dead tired and I had to wake up very early next morning, so I couldn't really contribute as much as I wanted to. I had a bit of guilt there because I felt like I wasn't contributing enough by my own standards, right? Yeah, and then I was completely out. So basically, like, I had 4 weeks where, like, two of them were disrupted. 2 weeks were completely offline. Then you guys left. And then I really went to work with like insane intensity. And part of that, I think, was to overcompensate. I think that was maybe part of the internal drive. But then my wife was like, so what are we doing for New Year's? I'm like, I don't know. I'll probably be working. But then I started to feel this kind of guilt toward the family. They've been putting up with a lot of stuff. We're not taking vacations and all that because, you know, we're not making any money. So we decided to take a road trip to Savannah, Charleston, and St. Augustine. Overall, I think we drove about 2,000 miles in about 5 days or so.
You listen to a lot of podcasts in there.
Yes, that's true. And I'm like, I'm not going to be working those days. So what? But overall, I think I took kind of disproportionate time off compared to the rest of the team.
I don't think so, because for the current time period of our company, I feel like Jenny and I, basically, we are coding all the like features, right? And you jumped in, you're making great progress on the coding side. But back then in November, you were not. And we didn't really need like day-to-day
CEO.
I don't know, newsletter or content CEO. Yes, we didn't need a day-to-day CEO at that time. But I think let's say maybe in Feb, March, maybe that equation does change. Yeah. But then again, why are we doing this? We're doing it for ourselves, for our families, for our friends, right? If we are like going to hold ourselves to the same shackles that we did earlier on, then why are we taking this extra risk of like not earning money and trying to do this ourselves?
So are you implying we are not building a unicorn and changing the world?
I don't think we were ever building a unicorn. We were pretty clear from the beginning, right?
I just don't know if my statements came out sarcastic enough.
I mean, if it does become a unicorn, we are pretty clear that we want to work in small teams. If it looks like, oh, this is like a massive ship that's about to take off, at least me, and I feel like you too, would like, okay, let's get out of this. Let's get our money or whatever out of this and take off. Because from my past experience, I don't think I function very well at 60 or 80 people size when I'm working with them for my own mental health.
Yeah, I feel like the sweet spot is probably about between 5 and 10.
Two people. Yeah. I want to say the most fun I have had is right now, for sure. There's a lot of freedom and lots of velocity in what we're building and lots of interesting decision making. I'm really enjoying it. Similar thing was in AWS when you and I, we had maybe 4 or 5 people on the small team. We were making like similar decisions. And then it became like the bigger successful thing, like 60 people. And then we were like, okay, I'm basically in meetings all the time. So
I feel like there's also a difference between 60 people total and 60 people within a 50,000 organization, because you get all of that massive overhead. So yeah, I feel like for me, at least that's my feel, right? That the sweet spot will be between 5 and 10 people, closer to 5, I would say. But it also depends, like, so if you get a lot of support requests, for example, like hiring a support person would be like totally worth it, right? When I say people, I mean engineers. Any other functions, we'll probably try to outsource as much as we can rather than hiring FTEs. I think the top is probably like 30 people is where I would probably still feel comfortable. But then beyond that, I was reading these stories where there would be like 30-person team growing to like 300 in a year. That must be very...
exhausting.
Exhausting, yeah. I wouldn't say painful, but there is a tendency to glorify pain, no pain, no gain, and all that stuff, you know. Exhausting, I think, is the right word. And also, it's chaos.
Yes, it's total chaos, yeah. For me too, I think the sweet spot will be maximum of about 5 to 8 people, but I can stretch myself and still be happy and still be like mentally healthy till I want to say maybe 15, 20 people that I'm working with. Beyond that, why did I leave Amazon, right? Like I wanted to build things. I feel like beyond 15, 20 people, if I'm working with them, then most of my work would be actually helping or guiding or design review and this sort of thing and not being able to build myself anymore.
So are you saying that at this scale, you're not going to build?
What do you mean? No, I didn't get that joke.
It's a good segue into Builders Gonna Build podcast.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Yeah, so Builders Gonna Build.
So our topic number 2. As we talked in our emergency episode...
last week. Pew-wee. This is getting a bit old now, even for me. I don't know about the listeners, but yeah.
I'm just having a blast with it. I'm so enjoying it. You know, if you ever listen to John Courtney, the Unscheduled CEO podcast, where he has this machine that basically you just press the button and it makes sound in the podcast.
The Roadcaster. First few episodes were super fun, yeah.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed that part of him like fiddling with stuff. So I don't have money to buy Roadcasters, so, but I have a co-founder.
Who can make the same noises, yeah. Yes. The first episode of Jonathan Courtney's, I think he did a few episodes only, then decided to shut it down. But the first episode literally was him trying to figure out his recording instrument.
Actually, he did release a couple of episodes just recently. And there was one, I think late December or early January is when he published the one that I listened to. So it's a bit of a detour, but it's relevant, I promise. He was building in public there. Because he said, exactly a year ago, I said, my goal is to go from 7-digit to 8-digit revenue, like whatever, triple the revenue. And he's like, did we achieve this? And there was some funny music and a couple of minutes of waiting. And he's like, oh, fuck no. And then he goes into details of why not and all that. It was very naked, you know, very transparent. I really liked it. So let's talk about like why we launched the podcast. So it's actually an example of how we make a decision in this company. Here is the premise. We started the podcast as a podcast about podcasting. We will not go into that. I think we talked about that. Talking with Jonathan Courtney and Jake Knapp in our second recording, they said, well, you guys, you can't publish every other week. Do it weekly. But we were like,
it's a lot of work to like schedule a guest for a weekly podcast.
Exactly, yes. And he's like, yeah, just ramble every other week because that's what they did in their podcast. They just rambled every single week. That's how this whole idea of 1 week we ramble, 1 week we have a guest came from. And then eventually it shifted from talking about podcasting into more like entrepreneurial stuff. We renamed the podcast to Metacast Behind the Scenes. But it kind of bugged me a little bit, but not strongly enough, that we mix up this kind of building public stuff with conversation with some random entrepreneurs and Wharton professor. And, you know, these are great interviews, but it can be a bit jarring to listen to the episodes in succession, you know, subsequently.
In succession, yeah. Which is a great TV series, by the way. But okay, back to your topic.
And then Guang, who is a host of Software Misadventure podcast, they were on our episode 12 or 14 or 16, I don't remember anymore. We've kept in touch, right? And we also went on their podcast a couple of months ago. And then Guang, he and I talked and he's like, I think you guys need to split out the interviews into a separate podcast. Mixing up two topics, it's just, I don't know. And I've been thinking about that for a couple of months. And then I'm like, yeah, maybe we should do it. So I wrote a doc.
And I feel like our ramblings originally were literally like rambling. We'll just pick up whatever the heck topics we wanted and like talk about it. But more recently, I want to say the last 2-3 months, it's been about building our company and the decisions we're making or the challenges we're facing or the successes that we're having. And I think that's when we decided, okay, this is Metacast Behind the Scenes, right? And we started seeing a bit of like connection to our fans. I want to say fans, basically, right? Friends, family, people who use the app. But basically, they have a direct connection to us. We've heard from people that they like listening to that side of the podcast. The guest episodes on their own, I feel like they do great. Depending on the guest, like Jason Fried episode did great, right? But then people who are just checking out that podcast episode, why would they stick around to listen to all this other stuff about this internal details of a small company that they neither know or care about? So that makes sense. Initially, I didn't really feel one way or the other it's going to make that much of a difference. But quite literally, in today's recording, as we are talking about it, I am feeling there was always a pressure to do this Metasode episodes in a way that would make sense to like a random stranger. To me, at least. Today, I'm not feeling that at all because I know that only our fans are going to listen to this stuff, not shit stuff. And the interviews are going to be on a completely separate feed. We are going to be great interviewers, hosts and all that. And we'll talk about that there. So that pressure is gone. With that comes all these like jokes and emergency podcasts, wee wee sounds and all that. I'm feeling so much better recording it.
I have actually exact same feeling right now. I noticed it before, but now you basically vocalized what I was feeling.
I'm good at vocalizing.
We are much clearer about the audience now, because that was the problem, right? The positioning. Who is it for? Previously, we thought about, okay, how can we make our behind-the-scenes episodes such that they're useful to a random entrepreneur who could learn something from us, or like one entrepreneur who may be like at an earlier stage even than we are. And now I don't feel like that at all. Now it's just a diary of us building in public. If you're a user of the app, if you just like our personalities, connect with us, right? You can listen to that. But there is no pressure to conform, like you said, to the overall theme, which was kind of muddled by the interviews. And then On the Builder's going to build podcast. So that's going to be like, we are going to over-prepare as usual, right? Like stick to the topics. So basically the way we want to make things there is like, if somebody listens to our interview with Christian Selig, to make them interested in listening to the next episode, listening to other episodes.
By the way, interjecting, Christian messaged me this morning saying that we're a really good podcast interviewing team. So kudos to us. Yay.
Yay. Did he listen to the episode, you know?
Yeah, that's what he said. He was listening to it already. That's when he, I think, sent it to me saying, I'm having a lot of fun and you are a really good podcast interviewing team.
Nice. That's probably because I was keeping quiet most of the time.
We have episodes like that where you take the lead and I'm interjecting once in a while, but sometimes I take the lead and I think it goes well. I liked it. Yeah.
Actually, it's interesting. Meta point. A couple of things we've discussed on today's episode are the things that we didn't talk about. So, and we are just having this discussion for the first time explicitly on this podcast. And that's also an inside look into how we communicate, because that's just how we talk. I talk faster when I don't record.
And I don't make like these emergency sounds normally. Just believe me. Yeah.
You make other sounds, non-emergency sounds.
Okay, that sounds wrong. Okay. Yeah. Okay, do you want to talk a little bit about the doc?
Right. So basically what we were seeing is there is not a lot of traction on the podcast. And like you said, when there was a guest episode like Justin Frankel or Jason Fried, the numbers would just go through the roof and then like come back down to where they were. Maybe a single digit improvement, right? So which means like people weren't sticking around. And also I noticed a lot of duplication of work that I was doing with the newsletter and the podcast, because they were going on different cadence. We would release the podcast every week. They were basically like two completely separate streams of recording and writing. But I'm like, how do we rationalize all that? So I started a doc. You know, it comes from my time at Amazon, like when in doubt, write a doc.
Which is actually true, right? To get clarity when you have muddled thoughts about anything. Maybe this is the lasting thing that Amazon leaves with us, but I love this. Like start writing it and things become so clear.
Yes. Yeah. I know some people dread writing because they feel like they're not good writers and all. Actually, I wrote my first book when I wasn't even 7, I think. Now, when I go back to, you know, my parents' place and I found that it's a school notebook with Looney Tunes on it. The plot is just absolutely terrible, but it's so cute. You know, that actually I was writing a book, a detective story in there.
You had Looney Tunes in Russia, like this is in the 80s?
Actually, no, because I turned 7 in 1990, so it must have been maybe between age 7 and 10 when they first started to enter the country. It was Looney Tunes Jr., whatever they're called, the smaller ones, not the Bugs Bunny, but the smaller versions of them, like their grandchildren or something. So I never shied away from writing. I always liked writing. So when I came to Amazon for the first time for the internship, I was like, wow, I felt like I found my home. I found the place where I could express thoughts in a way that works for me. And obviously, because we are all from Amazon, we all share the same love for the good parts of Amazon culture, including writing. So yeah, I started writing. But unlike Amazon, so at Amazon, you would write prose. You generally don't use bullet points, unless bullet points are like 2 or 3 sentences each. You just use bullet points for formatting. But otherwise, you don't just list a bunch of single, double word phrases in a bullet list.
You express your full thought in a sentence, yes.
Yes, yeah. So I don't do that anymore. And here, because basically what I needed is just to offload what I had in my mind to the paper. And also, like, as you're doing this, you start seeing patterns. And sometimes you start writing a sentence, you know, like, huh, how do I fill in the blank? And then you go dig for data, or like you express your thought in a way that makes the sentence make sense, which you can do with bullet points, by the way. So, but yeah, I wrote this doc in like 20 minutes before we met to discuss it. Well, we didn't have a meeting to review the doc. That would be too much. We just had our sync. I think it was one of the weekly syncs that we had. And I'm like, yeah, I have this topic. I laid down my arguments and proposed what we should be doing. And then both you and Jenny, I think you had a couple of comments or questions. And then we were like, yeah, let's just go for it. We made a decision like that. 20 minutes for writing a doc that wasn't even proofread. And then I talked through it.
But I think it was logically, it makes sense, right? Like I was describing 5 minutes back. But today I'm actually feeling the benefits of it. I think in hindsight, you did a great job articulating it through the doc, yeah.
I did not catch that thing that you actually expressed, that pressure to conform, which I think was always lurking.
Which when we are recording, we're feeling it now, so, or we are not feeling it now.
Yeah, for me at least, it was always subconscious, I think.
Right, me too, I think.
Yeah, I think you really dug it out. That was, I think, last Wednesday, so it was exactly a week ago when we made the decision, and then earlier today, The Builder's Gonna Build podcast was published for the first episode. Well, to be fair, we already recorded the Christian Selig episode under our Metacast brand, and we had to add new intro and like do some tweaks to make it work. But the whole thing of like coming up with the cover image, creating an account on Spotify for Podcasters where we host it, because I don't want to pay for this just yet, so it's all free. YouTube, all of that, Substack. It took me probably one full day spread across 3 days, calendar time-wise. It's just so amazing how fast it is to start a podcast.
Yeah. And as a specialist in starting a podcast, because from your acclaim of having written a book about this, I would be surprised if you said it'll take you like a week. Because when I was reading that book, I don't know a lot of the details, right? You manage everything about the podcast, but it was pretty clear that, okay, so these are the steps and I'm just talking about the book.
Yeah, the book is called The Pragmatic Podcaster. You can get it on Amazon for, I think, $10, I think is the current price for Kindle version.
Actually, somebody in India when I was there asked me about starting a podcast and I shared the book and they said, I forgot to tell you because I was there. They said they loved it. So
yeah, every now and then we get these $10, $15 payments from Amazon into our account. So which means somebody's buying that book. But there were no reviews. So if you read the book, leave us a review.
I'll ask him.
All right. So what we'll do is we'll publish that doc in our newsletter that comes out with this podcast. That's not a change, right? So now, actually, we put together the topics that we want to discuss on the podcast. And then after we record the podcast, I will write them up in the newsletter. It's a coherent narrative, right? That's in both places. And I feel like if you're really into us, I mean, you as a listener, I would recommend actually reading the newsletter in addition to listening to the podcast. Because when I write, more stuff comes up.
And it's, I think, much more clear than, this is more like a fun, raw version of it, live play-by-play. Yes.
With non-emergency sounds.
Yes. The writing, I love reading it myself. Even though it's the stuff that we have probably discussed a few times already, I love reading it. The clarity is awesome in there.
Thank you. Even though, like, in the last one, I really messed up. I put together a timeline of how things happened, and then I added to the timeline. What ended up happening is like in the email, because I corrected it in the web version, but in the email, you have something like March 2022.
November 2023, yeah. And then August 2022.
Yes. It was November, but then January, then August 2022, like the previous year. So it just doesn't make sense. And once the email is out, it's out. You can't fix it. Cool. All right. Let's conclude this with a topic I no longer gonna feel guilty about because the reader's gonna read. Every single episode, we end with what we are reading or listening, what kind of made an impression on us in the last couple of weeks. Let's alternate. I'll start with my first one.
Well, I don't have more than one, so.
So I've not been listening to many podcasts this week. I mean, the last couple of weeks. I did listen to the Rework podcast where they talked about their Apple kerfuffle. Yeah, 37 Signals, they created Hey Calendar is a new app that they've created and they submitted it to Apple and Apple rejected it because the Apple doesn't do anything unless you have an account.
The app doesn't do anything, they claimed, yeah.
Yeah. So and it's like exactly the same thing as they have in their Hey email app. I've been just following that. I really enjoyed that episode. I forgot the title. I think it's called Apple Again or something like that on the Rework podcast, where it's basically like half an hour rant by DHH. Jason probably excused himself from this because DHH is just so passionate about this. It was actually funny because in today's posts, I get the post by email from both of them. Jason was talking about the Apple VR thingy. To be honest, I didn't even read the post. I'm not interested in this, but I saw that it was about the Apple VR thingy. And then DHH's post was about that Apple should learn from the antitrust case for Microsoft. So like the left hand is praising Apple, and the right hand is like just bashing it, destroying it. Anyway, so it's a very cool episode that I think people should listen to. There was actually one nugget that's not about Apple there, because they spent a weekend working on a feature that made the app look like it does something to Apple. It passed approval afterwards. But then DHH was getting a bit of crap on Twitter, I think, for like, oh, you guys, like, you worked the weekend. How about it doesn't have to be crazy at work and all that? And he actually explained it very well. He said that, you know what's worse than working on the weekend? It's building something for a year and then seeing it being rejected for like a bogus reason, like an unclear reason by a gatekeeper. And he's like, of course we worked the weekend to like just get it out and get the satisfaction from seeing it in hands of customers and all that. He said it in different words, but the gist of it is, like I said, right? And that was very inspiring. So that's pretty much the only podcast I think I listened to this week. I've started reading Children of Dune, which is the third book in the Dune trilogy by Frank Herbert.
So it's not a fan fiction. It's also by him.
It's by him, yeah. It's the last book in the trilogy. So the first book is the Dune that most people would have read, most people who are interested in science fiction. The second book is about how Paul Ortiz becomes like a religion. And then the third book is about his children. And I just read maybe 40 pages or so. But what really struck me from the first pages, I'm like, okay, so I'm getting this book at exactly the right time. You ever get this feeling? I'm like, okay, so this book is almost like a godsend for you at like this specific moment. Like in the first pages, this guy Stilgar, who was the sidekick of Paul Ortiz, the Fremen guy, so he contemplates killing the children of Paul. I'm not spoiling anything. It's just the introduction, right? And he thought that like things used to be so much simpler. Now it's like so complicated, and should I just like end this now? The parallel I drew from that is just the world at large as we're living in right now. The pace of technological change is just jarring with AI. And it also got me thinking about my parents who were born in the early 60s. They first started using the internet in the late 90s, I think, maybe even early 2000s. So they were already like in their late 30s, early 40s. When I was a kid, we didn't have a telephone until I turned 12, I want to say. If you wanted to call someone, you had to go to a friend who has a telephone to make a call, to call our grandparents. We had to go to a postal office that had a telegraph, and they had a international calling booths where you go to an operator, you give them the number, they call that other place, and then they tell you, like, go to booth number 5. And then you go there and you talk, and then you pay by minute. And then we had a black and white television with no remote control until I was like 7. We got our first color TV when I was 7. So my parents have seen all that. They were probably feeling a lot of the internet, the way we are feeling AI right now. Because for them, the world was just changing when the internet really got traction, right?
I read something just yesterday very relevant to this. Forgetting where I read it from, I'll try to dig it up. If we find it, we'll put it in our show notes. But essentially that generation, like your and my parents, they had an easier transition going into computers than they're having with smartphones. Even though smartphones are way easier to use compared to like computers, early computers, because they have made that transition once, and making this kind of a huge transformation in your head about how things work, technology works twice, is apparently insanely hard. We don't feel that way, so.
I think it was on the A16Z podcast. I remember that Mark Andreessen said that.
I read it on something recently, yesterday or so. Not in a podcast, but possible, yeah.
I don't think it was his idea. So it must have originated somewhere else, and he just vocalized it on a podcast. It just got me thinking how they were describing there in the book. I mean, Frank Herbert was describing in the book what was happening to their society. The Dune became like a garden with all that. I hope I'm not spoiling much, but it was very different. If you remember, the Fremen were like the desert people. They terraformed the planet and all that. The political system has changed. So also now what we have with all the wars going on and all this stuff. I really want to finish the book because I want to know what it ends with, because that might be the way our world is going to develop.
It's a harbinger for our own. Yeah.
It just feels like so much instability because things have accelerated so much in various spheres of our life.
I read only the first book. I have not read the second one even. Makes me want to pick it up.
The second one doesn't have much action. It's very deep. There is a lot of theology there, I think. I really enjoyed it. It's really good. So yeah, and the last thing, I'll be brief. my son and I watched Back to the Future, the first two parts. So he was not really fond of watching any of the old movies because he watched Home Alone and he's like, oh my God, this is like so boring. But then I really wanted to hook him onto Back to the Future because I'm like, this is different. I think he was reading something where there was like a time travel paradox. And I told him about Back to the Future and the paradox that's in there. And he got really interested. And he's like, okay, let's watch it. And so we started watching the first 10 minutes. He was like, this is so boring. And then when the action starts, he really got into it. We watched the two parts and he can't wait to watch the third one. So I'm so happy to have created another convert.
I remember watching that with Pahi. I think maybe she was 9 years old at that time. She had the same like initial reaction, right? This looks so old. But we all had such a blast. We watched like back to back to back like twice or three times in like over 2-3 weeks. It was so fun, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was the end of the first part and in the beginning of the second part where there is a flying DeLorean. And he's like, oh my God, this looks so fake.
Yeah, the action is totally, yeah. Okay, so I haven't been reading or listening much. So Australian Open started this week. I'm a huge tennis fan, as people probably know who listen to this podcast. So I've been like awake at night watching it because it's in Australia. The big marquee matchups of the day happen in their evening time, which is late night our time, like 12 or 1 a.m. start here in Vancouver. So I've been doing that. Other than that, after coming back from India, I think our Builders Gonna Build is the first episode that I've started listening to.
It's an awesome pick.
Yeah, it's a great pick. So far, having fun. We have had some beautiful, like brutally cold, but beautiful weather here. So I've been taking a lot of photos, walking around with Boomer, posting it. I usually maybe post once a month or so on Instagram. This is like every day I'm posting. And today we have this beautiful snow happening. So there's probably more coming. And found some newish type of music that I had not been listening to when I was in India. So I've still like listening to a lot of that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's not been much audiobooks or podcasts recently.
Nice. Oh, I've also been listening to a bunch of audio messages in the last few days because I've reconnected with a very old friend of mine who we went to college with together. Haven't kept in touch for the last 3 years or so. And then, yeah, we are having some theological discussions. Last message he sent me was 1 hour long. It's like this long. So I would go for a run. I would listen to it almost as if it's a podcast. And I would take notes on some of the things that he mentioned. And then I would record back to him like another like 2 half-an-hour messages. And we maintain multiple topics in parallel. You wouldn't be able to have this level of depth in the discussion face-to-face because you would just run out of stamina, I think. But if you do it across multiple days and you actually have time to think about what the person said, fully digest everything that they said so far, and then record your response, I think that creates for a very interesting, I also almost want to say genre, because these discussions, you can actually listen to them almost like a book, right? Or like a podcast. I'm really enjoying that part.
It's almost like you're private podcasting to each other.
Essentially, yes. Actually, my wife made up this term. Like, she has a friend who would sometimes send her like a very long message late at night. So my wife would get it in the morning and she's like, oh, it's my morning podcast.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Let's wrap it up.
So if you enjoyed our new podcast, well, I guess our newfound freedom to say what the heck we want, please give us a review and a star rating. Hopefully a good one. If you didn't like it, just send us an email instead. And people can email us at hello@metacastpodcast.com. Actually, this is what I would say. If you don't like this format, just unsubscribe. Give us 5-star rating and unsubscribe.
Because it's going to be like this. Yeah, if you like only the interviews, then subscribe to the Builders Gonna Build podcast.
And it's a very short and sweet URL, Builders Gonna Build. I was so surprised nobody has taken this domain. I bought it for like $14.
When you shared it with me, I thought maybe there's something wrong with the way the letters are. Because you know how, like, remember that expertsexchange.com? Remember that fiasco?
No.
So there was a really famous website before Stack Overflow. Basically, people ask technical questions and people answer. That was called Experts Exchange.
Sounds like .com era website.
Yeah. So literally the website was expertsexchange.com. But when you write it out, and especially when you look at the URL, what jumps out is expertsexchange.com. It was hilarious. Like, they launched it and it became a meme, I think. Yeah.
So fun. Yeah. So buildersgonnabuild.com, or just type buildersgonnabuild in any app. I was surprised there is no podcast with the same name. The URL was available. It's even going to be Googleable at some point. If you're really into podcasting and you listen to podcasts a lot, you would like to get a better experience listening to podcasts, check out Metacast at metacast.app. If you're listening to this at the time this is published, it's not yet available, but you can enter your email and we will send you an email when the app is released.
And if you really, really want it right now, then subscribe there and then send us an email to Ilya or me, or to hello@metacastpodcast.com. We'll get you into the beta.
I think the email we publish, I think, is team@metacast.app. Or hello@metacastpodcast.com, hello@buildersgonnabuild.com. So you've got a lot of emails.
Yeah, wherever, yeah. You have many ways to reach us, so please reach us.
Okay, cool. I really enjoyed this, Arnab. Let's do more of this in the next coming months.
Me too, it was fun. All right, let's close it with the wee-oo, wee-oo.
Let's try to do this in unison.
Okay.
Wee-oo.
Uno, dos, oh. Okay. Uno, dos, tres.
Wee-oo, 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 wee-oo.
Bye-bye.